Hey everybody, this is Eric Clark, Dynamic Brands Portfolio Manager. It's Tuesday, June 20th, around the market close today, and wanted to leave you with about 20 minutes of an update on the global consumer spending theme and the mega trends that we see within the consumption theme through an interview with a major global brokerage firm that happened earlier today. So just understand this is not advice. This is just what we are doing in the portfolio currently. Those things can change at any time. Holdings can change at any time without any notice. Please do your own research. But this should give you an idea of what we, you know, how we performed from taking over brands into the peak of the market 2021 and what happened in 2022 when we lagged and what style factors really lagged and why, and then what's driving our outperformance year to date as well, just to get you up to speed. So please enjoy the next 20 minutes. I appreciate it.
Hey, Dan. Great to see you.
So, Eric, to get right into it, it's interesting to know that a dedication to iconic global brands is quite unique. There aren't any other funds or ETFs that do exactly what you do. So what did you see that others didn't, which prompted you to start the brand strategy back in 2016?
It's a great question. Part of it was personal experience. You know, as an early investor 30 years ago, I was a little bit brainwashed by things like Peter Lynch and the Know What You Own. And it was just easy for me to invest in things that I understood and in products that I consumed. And I had a great experience. I mean, some of my best long-term winners were these great brands like a Lulu or a Nike or a Home Depot or, you know, Apple and Amazon. And I, you know, selfishly, when I wanted to start this with AccuVest, I looked at the field to see if there was anything on a fund or on an ETF basis, and there really wasn't something focused on brands. And I thought that was a little odd, and I had, you know, I've had 30 years of experience of investing in these companies. And so sometimes when you see a good idea and it's not being utilized in the market, you have to create it. So part of it was just a personal experience. And then the other was just one of those connecting of the dots thesis, you know, to address this home bias that we all have. I mean, you know, we all live in the U.S. and 75% or more of our portfolios are U.S. stocks and U.S. bonds. And so whether we like it or not, or whether we recognize it or not, we're somewhat tethered to the prosperity of the U.S. economy. And so if you're going to be tethered to something, it's really important to understand what drives that something. And in our case, it's consumer spending. You know, consumption's in our DNA. And so, you know, having something that was tied to the consumption theme, which is about 70% of U.S. GDP and about 60% of world GDP, just seemed really logical and common sense. And then when you turn to the performance of these great businesses, it was a bit of a no-brainer. So you're addressing a home bias by doing it through great companies, leading companies, serving this massive driver of the economy. And it just so happens that the leaders tend to have wonderful track records. So why not create a dedicated fund to give, you know, advisors and investors an easy way to get access to that theme?
Since taking over the fund back in October of 2017, that into the peak of the market in November of 2021, it looks like the fund had significantly outperformed the S&P 500. Can you speak a bit as to what drove, in your view, this alpha generation?
Yeah, sure. I mean, number one, we, by design, do not want to look like an index. And so we take pretty active bets. And, you know, you can expect, advisors can expect a high tracking error, which is what you want. You know, it's certainly a good fund to pair with an index ETF portfolio, you know, And from a what drove performance perspective, you know, a couple of things come to mind. Number one, in the COVID year of 2020, the fund significantly outperformed, primarily because we had a lot of flexibility. We kind of avoided what was closed, if you will, and the industries and sectors that weren't doing well, and we overweighted the things that were open and where consumers were spending. And so, you know, if you think about it, we owned a lot of the big brands, the retail brands that were deemed, you know, essential, as well as a lot of the e-commerce brands, and then technology, because technology and digitization and all those kind of mega themes were where money flowed, and we were out of things like travel and things that were closed. We got back into travel when, you know, a lot of these stocks came down 30-40% in a really short period of time, so we got a chance to get into some of those things, which helped performance in the back half of 2021. But there were some major outperformers from some of the mega trends that we see. I mean, you know, over that period of time, the S&P was up about 93%, and Blackstone and KKR were up 300-400% over that same period of time. And that's a key mega theme, a mega trend that we're playing in the fund, of as more assets migrate from public securities into alternatives. And those companies had great years, and things like athleisure as a lifestyle. Lululemon was up like 670%. Deckers, which we love, primarily because of the Hoka brand, the sneaker brand, was up a little over 500%. And so, you know, we just had these great businesses that did really well in a year like 2021. And then we did in 2018 in the fourth quarter, when the markets got very volatile, when the Fed was raising interest rates into a slowdown, about the middle of November of that year, we raised about 35% in cash, and we got very defensive, which really helped us on the downside to eke out a positive gain in 2018. And so, you know, just making some active decisions about when to take risk, when to take some risk off, and which sectors and industries to overweight was really what drove that performance into the peak of the market in 2021.
So just to acknowledge 2022 for a few moments, like most equity funds in 2022, brands had a difficult year. Would you say, Eric, the underperformance was as a result of most brands operating through a difficult fundamental business environment or inflation and rates driven? What are your thoughts on 2022's performance?
Dan, that's a great concept, because when we look at the fundamental level, 90% or more of the names that we owned fundamentally did great in 2022. This was one of those, you know, rates are up, inflation's up, we need to take multiples down, let's just sell anything growth and quality regardless without thinking about it. Because let's face it, you know, the CTAs and algorithms drive a lot of the daily trading volume of markets these days. And, you know, in many cases, these computers just sell things regardless, or they sell a basket of things regardless of everything in the basket should be sold. And so, you know, 2022 was just this very odd year where the fundamentals of these businesses were really strong and the market just didn't care. And we put out a number of notes through 2022 just saying, you know, these are wonderful opportunities. I mean, I can prove in a variety of different ways that the leading brands just tend to be monster strong stocks over a long period of time. But it doesn't mean they're going to do that every year. I mean, Apple has had, you know, 15 negative years since it went public, and yet you had this massive, massive outperformance. And so the moral of the story for an advisor is, you know, you're investing in this theme that drives every major economy, and you're doing it through leading companies, leading brands that tend to have a long, strong track record. So when you see this kind of weakness in a calendar year or in a, you know, kind of clustered period, you've seen how the movie ends. You know how this ends, and that's the opportunity to start building bigger positions in these great companies, because you know they're leaders, they tend to take market share, and they tend to have big snapbacks when the market just acts irrationally in shorter periods of time. And we showed one chart towards the end of the year that showed a lot of these great brands, when they had a negative return for a calendar year, what the subsequent three-year average returns were, and it was pretty robust. And that's probably why you're seeing the outperformance again in 2023, because a lot of these names just should never have been down the way that they were. I mean, Amazon was down about 50% or so. You know, Louis Vuitton was down 30 at one time. Just some of the silly drawdowns, and now they've kind of reset, and a lot of these names are right back to all-time highs. But there certainly still are some names that are performing well year to date that still have, we think, you know, 30, 40, 50% upside, you know, as we go forward over the next 3 years.
So running with that a bit further, as we make our way through history, it does get brighter, as you suggested, from the market's bottom in October of 2022 to year-to-date here in 2023. It does look like the fund is back on track, back to outperforming the S&P 500 again. What you were explaining a few moments ago, is that solely what you would attribute this to, or anything else factored in, Eric, that you would like to share with us?
Sure. Part of what we do is, you know, we build these core long-term positions and great brands, but when the market acts a little irrationally in the short term, we like to trade around them and tactically add more. So, you know, particularly in the fourth quarter, I mean, tax loss selling was huge for people. And so, some great companies got really pushed down towards the end of the year, and we built a little bit of a basket that was strictly for tax loss selling and more tactical opportunities around the core. And we added a few names that were strictly something that we didn't necessarily want to have as a core name, but we saw just as a wonderful trading opportunity. So, you know, along with just a rebound in a lot of these great brands that we have held since 2016, we also saw the opportunity to tactically add to them. So when I look at some of the ads, I mean, we added to Tesla, Apple, Spotify, PayPal after getting blacked in 2022, Amazon, Mercado Libre, Ferrari, Uber, KKR, and Blackstone. So those were some big ads that we, in many cases, have since pulled off that were just wonderful tactical trading opportunities around the core. And then we added a few names. You know, the last time that we owned Meta, which is the old Facebook, we sold it the day it kissed the trillion-dollar market cap. And last year, that stock was down over 70%, which just seemed incredibly silly. And so we added a Meta when it was down 70%, and that stock's up, you know, 130% or so. We added Hermes and an extra allocation to that mega theme of alternatives in Apollo. I absolutely love what Apollo's doing on the alt side. It's very different than a Blackstone and a KKR. And we got a chance to add to that in the fourth quarter when the markets were just kind of selling everything regardless, just from a tax loss perspective. And so, you know, you see Amazon was down 50 last year and it's up 50 this year. You know, Mercado Libre was down big last year. It's up 40% this year. You know, you just had some names that frankly never should have been down that we got a chance to add to around the core. Plus we added a few names that we didn't have that just got way too cheap to, you know, allowing us to add to those things. So there is a bit of a core plus tactical trading approach when the market gives us that opportunity. You know, we don't look for trades just to trade. There's obvious ramifications to that in a fund. We do a lot of tax loss harvesting on a monthly basis to keep the, you know, the net gain as low or negative as possible. But sometimes the market gives you an opportunity to get into something, get paid, and then get back into cash until you see something that's a great opportunity. And that's kind of what the market's offered year to date.
Well, Eric, thank you for the transparency around the recent performance track record over the past few years and digging into some tactical moves as well that you've made. Maybe we can dig a bit deeper in terms of portfolio construction. Can you speak a bit to how the fund is positioned currently, including sector, style, box, and the thematic exposures as well that you currently have?
Yeah, sure. We have this, you know, as I said before, we kind of have this mega trends theme within the dominant theme of consumption. And so this allocation to alternative asset managers. We don't own any bank exposure currently. We generally don't, although, you know, there are a few that are starting to look intriguing. But from an alt perspective, about 22% of the fund now is Blackstone, KKR, and Apollo. And you know, Blackstone and KKR in specific, because they have a lot of real estate and private equity exposure, those two companies are some of the best investors the world has ever seen. They have hundreds of billions of dry powder to put to work, but two-thirds of their business right now is kind of in hibernation. And so, you know, they've been lagging over the last 12 months or so, but you're getting paid some decent dividends while you wait. And that's the future source of some really good outperformance as those businesses start to get better in private equity, and the capital markets opens up a little bit and more M&A happens. So that's kind of what I call the sleeping giant part of the portfolio. And we're really balanced by kind of offense and defense today, with a good slug of staples and healthcare, about 30% of the fund, in names like McDonald's and Hershey's and Costco and Pepsi. With on the healthcare side, we have Thermo Fisher, which is the leading instruments and diagnostics firm, and as well as Eli Lilly. So, you know, those things tend to be a pretty good ballast when the market gets a little bit squishy, and they also tend to be good sources of funds. So if the market tends to pull back sometime in the summer or the fall, you know, we have about 30% of the fund that we can add, you know, that we can sell and add to the beta side, you know, aka the offense side, on, you know, on some dips. And so, you know, there's certainly, we are overweight consumer discretionary relative to the benchmark, but we are much less overweight consumer discretionary than we typically are, just because the consumer is a little bit, you know, specific about how they're spending. We've been overpaying for things for about, you know, 18 months or so, and that certainly can't go on forever. And so we're very specific about the exposures to consumer discretionary because of that reason. And, you know, if the market pulls back a little bit, I certainly see the two ads us focusing on are beefing up the consumer discretionary names on sale, as well as beefing up tech. We are underweight tech currently. And I certainly on dips, I'd love to get back maybe to a market weight, but we'll see. You know, if tech really gets beat up, then we'll add meaningfully to technology, because that obviously is a big, strong, long-term performer. And if we can buy them on sale, that would be terrific. We do have some good exposure to non-U.S. companies. I mean, the nature of a great brand tends to be that they have a lot of non-U.S. sales. So we're a little tethered to that style factor of international sales. But we do have names like Louis Vuitton and Hermes and L'Oreal on the cosmetic side, as well as some emerging market exposure through Mercado Libre, which is, you know, the Amazon of Latin America. So we're pretty diverse across geographies and sectors, and balanced by offense and defense currently.
Now, your focus, Eric, of consumer discretionary, tech, comm services, as well as consumer staples, generally speaking, performing well on a year-to-date basis. Have advisors missed their opportunity to allocate to the global consumption theme? What are your thoughts there?
Well, I mean, listen, anything's possible in the short term, but if you think big picture, and, you know, let's face it, we're building portfolios for clients that are multi-year in duration. And the consumption theme, not only is it the largest theme on the planet, but it's very persistent. And so, you know, how we spend over time changes. But, you know, like I said, you're still getting a lot of brands that are still down from their peaks. And the greatest companies tend to take market share in slower times. And whether it's through cost-cutting initiatives, laying off people and right-sizing the workforce, to, you know, using AI to get more productive and keeping margins afloat, or being, you know, having great pricing power to be able to raise prices and hold them in a more inflationary environment. You know, these are the times when great companies take market share. So I would say that, number one, you know, it's silly to not have a dedicated allocation to the consumption theme, given how large and prevalent it is, particularly because we have this home bias to the U.S. and it's 70% of the economy. So it's always a good time to add to the theme. And, you know, we're just being mindful of how much risk we take within the theme, given, you know, that consumers are really making decisions about where they're going to spend currently. But, you know, I personally think over the next quarter or so, we're going to see consumer discretionary in particular names finally hit their kind of trough from a comps year over year. And you're going to, and a lot of these things have pulled back, you know, names like Target are off almost 50%. So there's a lot of names that are really intriguing down here from a valuation perspective that we could be adding back to the fund. So I would say there's certainly no reason to believe that you've missed anything. You know, last year we tried to get people on board when the fund was down but you know, this is the industry, the only industry that we get cautious when great things go on sale. And I understand that from a mentality perspective, but you know, we're 20 to 25% off the lows. But if you look at the portfolio, there's still a lot of potential upside in the average name that we have. And there's still a lot of names that are well off of their all-time highs, but their businesses are inflecting higher. So they're, you know, if you're cautious about the market in general, but you appreciate the theme, I always tell advisors, just start small. Put your pinky toe in with a small allocation. When the market pulls back, you start building up that allocation. So it's a, you know, a meaningful allocation given the importance of the theme